From Utah Public Radio, this is Undisciplined. I'm Matthew LaPlante. For about 15 years now, I've been sitting in the North Goal at the stadium in suburban Salt Lake City, where Real Salt Lake plays soccer. And I chose those seats in part because for 45 minutes each game, I am within earshot of the opposing team's goalkeeper. And Lord help me, I really like this part of being a sports fan.
Hey, Fry! It seems like your sciatica is acting up. You're a worse goalie than you are a painter!
If you listen to this program a lot, you know that I'm sort of a nerd about research, and that applies to the ways in which I heckle, too. I look up the goalies' hometowns, their family histories, what their spouses do for a living, how much money they make, what teams they've played for before. And I always try to find something from their past that they wish they could forget, usually like a big mistake in a big game. Now, a lot of people who sit around me are doing exactly what I'm doing, or trying to at least. They want to get inside the head of the visiting players. But by and large, if I'm being honest here, they're not very creative. They're like, hey, number 14, you suck. Now, maybe I'm being stuck up about something stupid. Actually, you know what? Definitely. I'm being stuck up here about something stupid. But I've always thought there is an art to trash talk. And Rafi Kohan thinks so too. In his new book, he also dives into the history of trash talk, the science of trash talk, and a whole bunch of case studies of when it worked and when it didn't. But Kohan's book isn't just a treatise on trash. As he sees it, it's also about civility and moral dilemmas. It's about the kinds of people we want to be and the kinds of people we actually are. It's about risk and tolerance and anxiety and insecurity. And it's about upping the ante on life. Rafi Kohan is an Atlanta-based writer and editor, mostly focused on sports, although he also writes about travel, food, booze, and sometimes con artists, too. His new book is called Trash Talk, the only book about destroying your rivals that isn't total garbage. Rafi Kohan, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, and I'm happy to indulge this shameful side of you in conversation here.
I gotta admit, Rafi, like, I really considered not writing that introduction because I'm not super proud of this part of who I am.
Well, I can understand that impulse to not be proud of it, but I also applaud you for embracing it and inviting me on to talk about it here. You know, I think trash talk as you know, as some people might think about it, is a relatively new phenomenon, right? It's something that only popped up in our American cultural consciousness in the last 40 or so years. You think about it as something specifically, you know, the sort of variant that exists within the U.S. as being sort of a product of Black oral traditions like the dozens and emerging from, you know, cultures of hip hop and playground basketball. And in some of the pushback to that culturally and, you know, within the context of sports and beyond, trash talk has become stigmatized, or it was stigmatized and became sort of racialized and, you know, was something that was seen as deviant and something that was seen as punishment worthy. But I think that also skews, you know, our perception of what trash talk can be, you know, as I call it, the language of competition. So while I understand, you know, the impulse to self-flagellate for, you know, enjoying, you know, the heckling, you know, the heckling during a game, I think there is more to it, to that, obviously, since I wrote a book about it. So, you know, let's put a pin in the shame for now.
Well, because one of the things you stress in your book is that in a competitive environment, disrespectful words, they don't always come from a place of disrespect per se.
Well, one argument would be, and, you know, one that I believe, is that there is something inherently flattering and respectful about talking trash to your rival, to your opponent. By talking trash, you're actually saying to them, I'm taking you seriously as a competitor. I'm taking you seriously as an opponent. You're someone who's worth talking trash to. And even though it might be a perverse form of respect, you know, there is something, there's something to that. You know, Gary Payton, one of the great trash talkers of all time, you know, when young guys would come into the league and he would talk trash to them, some of them would just sort of like fluster or blush. And it was almost like, you know, they would say, they were saying to themselves, I can't believe I'm getting the Gary Payton treatment because he was known as this trash talker. And there was something flattering about that. In fact, there was an old baseball player named Bill Wamsgans. And I mean, we're talking, you know, more than 100 years ago now. And in one of his first games, one of his early games, at least, he was playing in a game against Ty Cobb, and Ty Cobb started heckling him. And Wamsgans responds by saying, you know, to himself, and, you know, others could hear him saying it, they said, gee, you know, Ty Cobb talking to a rookie like me, you know, it's like, what an honor. So there is something, right? I belong here somehow. And so it's worth, I think it's worth keeping that in mind, even when something is on its face, potentially offensive and mean-spirited, that there is at the very least a kind of inherent underlying respect, you know, flattery that's at play too. It doesn't mean that there's not a contradiction there. There is, of course, but let's remember that it's there.
I was so glad to hear Rafi say that, because that's the way I've always felt. I've always felt like it's not disrespectful to do what I do when I go to a ball game. It's actually, you know, like he says, flattery. And so I called up our producer, Reagan Edelman, because I had this idea. And my idea was I wanted to teach her how to do this too. And so I invited her along with me to a Real Salt Lake game.
And I like to consider myself a professional trash talker already. I come from a long line of trash talking. My family is full of sports fans. But what I was picking up from Matthew and Rafi is that you need to do some research. Because yes, it's all respectful and it's a really good representation of admiration for someone who's good at the sport, but there's something that Rafi talked a lot about, which is the effectiveness of distraction. And one of the best ways to do that was by doing our research.
And this is something that seems to have stemmed partially from a guy back in the late 1800s. There was this baseball player for the St. Louis Browns. His name was Arlie Latham. And this guy is sort of roundly considered to be the father of bench jockeying. And so before we get to the soccer game, let's go back to this guy, Arlie Latham.
Baseball was seen as this sort of like gentlemanly sport. You know, the rules and ethics were designed by these gentlemen's clubs. But Arlie Latham completely upended that, because so in those days, the players would actually serve as base coaches. And so his innovation was that when he was serving as the third base coach, he would literally run up and down the baseline, like, you know, hooting and hollering, like, you know, like a cartoon maniac, you know, screaming at the pitcher, trying to just, you know, do anything to upset his concentration, which, by the way, his behavior led to the advent of the coach's box. There's a reason that they're not allowed to like go outside of those, you know, however many feet that is, 5 feet or whatever. Then it's because of Arlie Latham.
Do you think Arlie was good at this, because he was good at it, or just because he was willing to go places that others weren't willing to go back then?
Well, it's hard to separate those two in some ways, right? One's willingness to go somewhere may make them great at it. But I also think there was something to him that made him, it takes a certain mind, right? We see some sort of innovation and we're like, oh, I could have thought of that. That's obvious. But you're not the one who did it, right? And it's like there must have been something within Arlie that, you know, just lent itself toward saying, you know, I can be a real asshole right here. And, you know, and I think that's going to get somebody to pay attention to me instead of what they're supposed to be paying attention to. And if they're paying attention to me instead of what they're supposed to be paying attention to, they're not going to be performing as well as they should. And there's real science that underpins some of this stuff. I don't think Arlie understood, you know, individual zones of optimal functioning and, like, you know, capacity interference. But when his Browns won 75% of their home games over the course of, you know, half of a decade, and other teams started parroting him because they saw how effective it was, you know, you don't really necessarily need to know the underlying psychology. You just know that it worked.
There are probably a million different ways to distract a goalkeeper. But for me, what I found is that the best is to step away from the ordinary chance, the thing that everybody says, because these guys are professionals. They can tune that stuff out by now.
Fry! Your Shar Pei is ugly!
It's even uglier than a regular Shar Pei!
And so this meant that we really had to do a deep dive into the personal life of the Seattle Sounders keeper, Stephen Fry. And to be entirely honest, I think the internet was an absolute goldmine for us.
Right, but now we got to go to his Wikipedia page. Okay, so he came to the U.S. as a teenager. He spent his entire professional career playing in Major League Soccer. You know what that means?
What does that mean?
He peaked really low. This is like the 10th. This is the 10th best league in the world.
Poor
if
guy.
If that. Personal life. Stefan is the second cousin of the retired captain of and all-time leading scorer for the Switzerland national football team, Alexander Fry.
We can chant about him not being Alexander.
You're not Alexander. He lives with his wife, Jennifer, and two dogs on Bainbridge Island, where he's building a home in Blakely Harbor.
So we found out he was Swiss, but he gave up his Swiss citizenship, and that was something. And he was big on xeriscaping, and he spray painted in his free time, and he had two Shar Pei dogs.
And all of that meant that our job was going to be really easy.
Your dogs hate you! Your dogs hate you! Your dogs hate you! All I want is at the end of this half him to turn around and just, like, tip his hat to me. That's all I want.
That's why you do this.
It's respectful. It's like Rafi said, right? Like, it's actually super respectful.
Reagan, do you think we got a solid head turn from him? Did we get inside his head?
I think I know that he heard us. I saw some slight head turns, but there was no tip of the hat.
Fry! Why did you give up your Swiss citizenship? You traitor! You're a bad citizen of Switzerland! He's shaking his head.
Yeah, I saw you get a head shake out of that one.
So knowing that we were in his head was the first part. But what I wanted to know from Rafi is whether we could get inside his head in a way that would actually be distracting to him as opposed to invigorating him and making him play even better. There's been a lot of journalistic examination of trash talk, less scientific. And one of the things that it occurred to me as I was reading your book is that in this day and age of sabermetrics and other forms of advanced sports analytics, nobody seems to have tried to empirically establish whether this actually works on a playing field. There's sort of like psychological experiments that have been done, but it would be really interesting to see whether the teams that engage in more trash talk are getting, you know, a wins benefit out of it.
So I'm smiling ear to ear right now because this was an area of investigation that I tried to go down a little bit because the same exact thought occurred to me, which is, can we apply in this moment of sabermetrics, as you said, you know, everyone, you know, is a quant in a, you know, a sports, you know, front office right now. Can we apply analytics to trash talk? Can we understand, you know, when it works, why it works, what would be the best times to deploy it? Because once you actually do understand the science of it and how, what are the mechanisms and pathways by which it can affect people, you can then also understand, well, when might someone be more susceptible to this? Or who is the type of person that may be more susceptible to this?
Hey, Fry! You know Alexander! Lesser Fry!
Lesser Fry! Lesser Fry! Lesser Fry! Lesser Fry! Lesser Fry!
We were loud enough with our hassling that I know that we got heard. And like we mentioned earlier, I'm pretty sure there were some slight head turns. So once this trash talk enters the universe, once we're shouting, what is it that happens, Matthew? Why does it work or why doesn't it work?
What Rafi mentioned is that while there aren't many studies about the psychological effects of trash talk per se, we do understand the basic reactions that we have as humans and why it may cause a difference in performance.
Stefan! Your wife, Jennifer! Seems like a really nice lady, and I'm happy for you.
You know, to speak to the side, you know, there are a couple of ways that trash talk can work. One is through anxiety, you know, and when I say anxiety, I mean like stress, like literal, like the internal stress, the arousal in your body. And there's a model in sports psychology called the individual zones of optimal functioning. And basically what that means is that every single person has a specific level, a zone of stress, of anxiety in their body at which they will perform their best. And so for some people, that could be very high. And for other people, it could be much lower. The sort of easy example, the example I give in the book, is you can think about a basketball player like Kevin Garnett, who was always like on the verge, it seemed, of madness and just like exploding. And his rival, Tim Duncan, who, you know, basically seemed like he was about to take a nap during games. And so for some guys, trash talk can actually help them get to their zone, right? If they're below their zones, they might not be performing at their best. But in, you know, someone talking to Kevin Garnett or Gary Payton, you know, they get them into this, you know, into this zone. It brings them into their zone where they will, in fact, be at their best. Another is that it can actually work as a kind of cue, you know, as like a psychological cue to remind yourself to focus on the things that you should be focusing on, or to self-regulate yourself to get back up into that zone, which is, you know, a mental skill that, you know, athletes often train, which is like how to either raise or lower my, you know, my anxiety levels based on where I need to be at my best. And so, you know, I suspect, for example, that Reggie Miller, right? And I'm a Knicks fan. I grew up a Knicks fan in the 1990s. So Reggie Miller is my, you know, my Voldemort. But, you know, you would think that on one level that if somebody is interacting with a heckler, right, if they're paying attention to someone in the stands, then they're by definition distracted. But if they're using that, you know, momentary distraction to, again, get themselves, raise their arousal levels to get to where they need to be, or as a cue to remind themselves to focus on the things they should be focusing on, it might be exactly the wrong thing to do. And obviously, as Knicks fans, we learned that lesson when Spike Lee started, you know, giving Reggie crap during the playoffs and chanting Cheryl, Cheryl at him. And Reggie went on to, you know, tear out our hearts on multiple occasions.
So it's a really dangerous game to play, this act of talking trash, because if you're talking crap to the wrong person, like a guy like Reggie Miller, it just causes them to lock in and perform even better, and then who's to blame?
Okay, I've got a story about this. So a few years ago, I was at a Rail Salt Lake game, and Tim Howard, who is an absolute legendary keeper, U.S. Men's National Team goalkeeper, who was at the time playing for the Colorado Rapids, which is, you know, like the regional rival of Real Salt Lake. And so I'm in his ear the whole game, and I'm doing the whole thing that you and I have been talking about all episode today. And I can tell that I'm in his ear, right? Like, he keeps like kind of like peeking back at me, and like, you know, he's kind of laughing, but he's also like kind of like frustrated, like, shut up, dude, you know? And then this rocket of a shot from Real Salt Lake comes toward the goal. And Howard just lays out. This guy like stands on his head and stops this thing, parries it away. And he looks back at me and just kind of like gives me that look like, yeah, I know. And I could tell, right? Like he was actually playing better because I was trash talking him.
Your garbage was the extra push that he needed. Your trash talk was. And he made sure you know it too, so smug.
I know, no. And you know, like tip of the cap to him, right? Like I got my karma as a trash talking fan that day.
And I wonder if part of that, too, is because it's his job. He's doing that every day. And Rafi mentioned that as a fan, it's really easy to forget that while everything's so exciting and the energy is so high in the stands, it might just be kind of mundane for the athlete almost. And so those extra pushes are key to getting them in that zone where they perform even better.
So it's easy to forget when you're in the stands and you're a fan that for professional athletes, sports become kind of mundane, boring even, right? You're doing the same thing every day. You're clocking in, you're clocking out. So to get up to that level, to have that level of motivation or to get to your, you know, your optimal zone of functioning, you know, for every single game, however many games it is, if it's 162 for baseball, 81 for, you know, for basketball, so on and so forth. You know, it's not always easy to get there. Sometimes you need, you know, a shortcut of some kind. And for a lot of guys, trash talk is just that kind of shortcut, right? It's a way to create motivation, to make this game matter more than it otherwise would, or to otherwise, you know, sort of create this kind of like instant pot for stress, for arousal, for, you know, again, for motivations that might not otherwise exist. You know, what we broadly conceive of to be sort of negative emotions like anger, we think of them as, well, they would probably have a negative effect on performance. And that's not, you know, universally true. Again, you know, there's an emotional component to the eyes off as well. And so for some guys, they need to be experiencing a lot of negative emotion to actually be performing at their best. Then, you know, and or they can use that negative emotion to get that anxiety and arousal. It's silly to, or it's almost like too simplistic to think about it this way, but there are other ways that we can get there. In fact, literally just breathing is a way to either, you know, raise our activation levels or lower it.
Which, yeah, I mean, the greatest piece of evidence for this, I think, and you write about this a lot in the book, too, like trash talk has sort of ascended the connection to competitive advantage. And, you know, the example of that is the most talented trash talkers in the world, I think by far, are professional wrestlers who, and I don't think we're, you know, giving anything away here, they're actually engaged in an athletic drama performance, not an actual sporting competition, but they have perfected this art of trash talk, raising the stakes on something that has, like, literally, really no stake, no actual stakes to it.
I think there is something inherently human about trash talk. I think it tells us something about who we are, you know, as social and competitive creatures. And I think it speaks to something noble even in terms of our aspirations, in terms of striving, in terms of trying to be at our best, right? The examples we gave before from the, you know, the Michael Jordans to the Tiger Woods to the Larry Birds, this idea that by engaging in this kind of competitive banter and this trash talk, by raising the stakes, I can guarantee that I will get to a level that I won't get to on my own. The very first, or what's widely regarded as the very first sports psychology experiment took place in 1897. And it was a couple of guys on a racetrack just running around. And the takeaway from this experiment was that you will run faster when you're running next to someone, then you will run on your own. And this phenomenon is known as social facilitation. It's the idea that somebody can push us further than we can go by ourselves, that we need that. We need that sort of, you know, that carrot up ahead or that benchmark up ahead or that stick up ahead. You know, I'm not trying to make any value judgments of carrots versus sticks here, but it's just, you know, this idea that we need to be pushed and we need to, and in ways that we can't always push ourselves. And trash talk is like the literal, you know, linguistic version of that. It's how we verbalize these kinds of challenges within the context of competition, and not just athletic competition, all kinds of competition. So yes, I do think we're better for it.
That's Rafi Kohan. His new book is Trash Talk, the only book about destroying your rivals that isn't total garbage. And don't worry, it's written at a level that even public radio listeners can understand. Rafi Kohan, thank you.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Undisciplined is a production of Utah Public Radio, and if you happen to live in Utah, you can listen to us every Thursday morning at 10:30 a.m. If you miss us, then you can listen to every episode of Undisciplined wherever you get your podcasts. Our program is supported by the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Utah State University. And from listeners like you, you can support our work at donate.nprstations.org/UPR. Our producer is Reagan Edelman. Our theme music is Little Idea by Benjamin Tissot. And I'm Matthew LaPlante. Thanks for listening. Now go have big ideas.